Lou Manfredini here. Do you have cracked or sunken concrete areas around your home? Call PermaSeal for a free estimate. Don't replace it, raise it. Call 800-421-7325 or visit permaseal.net.
I read and enjoyed Anne Libera's book, Funnier, A New Theory for the Practice of Comedy. You know, we do jokes every day, and Kelly Leonard has said, you know, you don't do them very well. I said, that's not the point, Kelly. We call them speed jokes. What we lack in quality, we make up for in velocity. But I just wanted to read a paragraph from page 5 of the introduction of Anne's book. And she said, in 1941, the novelist E.B. White and his wife, the great New Yorker editor Catherine White, wrote in a foreword to an anthology of humor that, quote, analyzing humor is like dissecting a frog. No one is very interested, and the frog dies of it. Since then, it seems that every writer who addresses the theory of comedy and humor has felt the need to somehow apologize for what they're doing by referencing White's frog. Mike Sack's excellent book of interviews with comedy writers is called Poking a Dead Frog. Anne, welcome to the studio. Welcome to the show.
Thanks so much.
Happy pub date. So the book comes out today.
It is very exciting. It's been a long way.
So I had a galley proof of it. Is it the same book that I've had that you are now publishing?
It is the same book.
Who is this book for?
I hope that it is for anybody. I mean, on a very straightforward level, it is first and foremost for my comedy students. It is taking the work that I have done over the course of the last 20 years and taught and said and putting it in one place so that people can reference it. But beyond that, it is for anyone who wants to use comedy better and anyone who wants to literally be funnier. I think there's a theory that people are either the funny or they're not, that comedy is a kind of magic. And absolutely, I do not
subscribe to that.
Well, no, I actually think that there are people who are naturally funny.
Yeah.
People who easily get to it.
Mm.
But the thing is that people can use comedy. Comedy is such a superpower. To understand that it's not magic and that you can make yourself funnier in all sorts of ways is, I think, something that professional comedians want to hide because it makes their work less magical, but real people and actually real comedians can benefit from it.
Yeah, I wondered. So, by the way, I don't know that I gave you the full introduction you deserve. We mentioned that you've authored Funnier, but you are the director of comedy studies at the Second City, and you are an associate professor of comedy at Columbia College as well. And we know your husband well, Kelly Leonard, who has been on our show many times. And I can already tell that the two of you must be the most fascinating couple at dinner. Your conversations are probably rich and anecdote-filled, full of gestures and references.
For the most part. I'm not going to deny that we have a lot of things to say to each other.
So what is your job then? What do you do at the Second City?
Well, currently I am a resident director for the Second City. I direct one of the Second City national touring companies, which tours all over the country as well as performing here in Chicago. And then I oversee the comedy studies semester, which is actually part of the degree in comedy writing performance that I created for Columbia College Chicago. Students come from Columbia, but also from all over the country and the world to do a semester abroad
all around
the
world.
City. Yeah.
Really? I mean, Second City, I probably should not be surprised. I guess I'm not, that brand is known all around.
Mm-hmm. Well, and there are students coming, I mean, primarily from English-speaking countries, I'll be honest, because we are teaching a kind of English-American style of comedy, but they're interested in getting that in-depth comedy cross-training, which is the thing that Second City is kind of known for, that are the people who come out of Second City and the people we know from Second City, the Bill Murrays, the Stephen Colberts, the Tina Feys, the Amy Poehlers, all have this ability to be writer, director, performers who work across mediums. So improvisation is the beginning of that, but it's all the other ways in which we approach comedy and really looking at comedy from a holistic standpoint.
But do you think the people at that level of comic genius, I'll say, think about it as a craft the way you write about it? You know, if I were going to be an accountant or a welder, I would know there's certain tools in my box or things I need to do to come up with a desired result? Is it as mechanical as, I don't mean that as an insult, but I mean, is there sort of a rubric that they follow to make themselves funny? Do they think about it in those terms?
I think we all think that there's going to be some kind of like Harry Potter world where you learn the spells. But really, it's more like math. Comedy is taking a set of elements and putting them together and then adjusting them depending on the audience that you're performing for.
And the elements that you talk about are recognition, pain, and distance,
yes,
right?
Absolutely.
So, and I've heard that comedy is the distance from pain or something like that. There's an aphorism, right?
I love the Mel Brooks quote, which is, tragedy is when I cut my finger. Comedy is when you fall into an open sewer and die. they say that comedy is tragedy plus time.
Yeah, that's the one I'm thinking of.
Right? But I think it is not truth. It is the biggest element of comedy that I think we tend not to think about. We think about the pain elements, right? We think about slapstick, where people get hit in the face. We think about shock and the elements of like a shock comedian. We think about taboo and the way that comedians use four-letter words, like the seven words you can't say on television, like George Carlin. But the most important and I think deepest element of comedy is this element of recognition.
And does that explain Nate Bargatze or John Mulaney or people like
100%. One of my favorite John Mulaney jokes is when he talks about being driving a car and how much he hates driving and how bad he is at it. And he's just a young man doing his best. And that, there's no joke there.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Right.
There's no trick of a pun. He's just describing something that's true.
Okay. And so I recognize that. What's the pain element?
Right. All of comedy contains some kind of pain. This one is the pain of saying a truth that isn't normally said. Right. So you can have pain of cognitive dissonance. You can have literal pain, again, like shock or falling down. But a lot of the pain is that feeling of, oh, you're saying something that I always thought and I didn't know what anyone else thought. And it's an interesting pain because it's a pain of connection.
I don't understand that. I mean, I understand pain as maybe something bad has happened to somebody. And we're diffusing it by making light of it. But you're not saying that necessarily.
I'm not. No, I think all comedy contains. I mean, when there's a reason audiences laugh at swear words. They are laughing at someone using a taboo. And we know at Second City that a well-placed F word will get a laugh from an audience barring anything else.
Do you coach people for, against, or around bad words or language?
Yeah, absolutely.
In what way?
One of the things you're thinking about is where is your audience's level of distance? So a lot of it depends on the audience, right? And it's fascinating. Again, I direct the Second City National Touring Company. So there are cities where we can't say enough bad words, right? On the other hand, different cities very close by, anytime we use anything that might be in the least bit a curse word, you'll get an immediate response of discomfort.
You wrote in your book, Funnier, about what it's like working on a cruise ship.
Yes. Well, the people go on cruises. This is the very interesting thing. People go on cruises to not have a bad time. It's why people go with large family groups on cruises. So you know you're going to get a lot of food, but it's not very highly spiced or interesting. But they are very upset if anything makes them uncomfortable,
right,
which means comedy on cruise ships is the hardest thing to do because there's always two or three people who are looking to get offended.
Right. So Louis C.K. on a stage on a cruise ship, the boat sinks.
No, not going
to
happen.
But it's interesting because Louis C.K., who I was just listening to a podcast the other day, they were arguing that he is going to enjoy a resurgence, if nothing else, as a writer and director, maybe not a performer. He has sins that will stay with him. But the thing about him was he would say the most remarkable, painful, personal things. And you were shocked. you recognized it.
Mm-hmm.
You laughed both because of the release, but also because it was kind of funny what he was doing.
Oh, absolutely. He was talking about the darkness that is in everybody, right? What's interesting to me is that I think part and parcel, though, of his sort of banishment, quote unquote, and he's not banished, by the way. There are tons of people who are listening to him.
He's doing well on the road.
Yes. Is that he presented himself as a truth teller. He presented himself as someone who was really speaking the truth, and then he hid aspects of himself that he didn't tell the truth about. He basically said, I'm telling you the whole truth of the thing. He had a great joke, in fact, where he would say, the other day I went into a bar, I'm not going to tell you which one because I'm lying. Right? But people saw him.
The typical comic setup. I was
absolutely
on a plane. I was at the airport.
I'm telling you that my comedy is a lie because I'm a truth teller. And then he hid some very fundamental parts of himself, which made people feel like the rest of that truth wasn't as true.
But back to the cruise ship then. So
yeah,
if the comic or the premise for the jokes is like, oh, this is going to make me feel uncomfortable, but it's going to be funny, there's going to be a payoff, you don't go there, was
no.
your point.
Yeah, well, and this is very interesting. So the cruise ship that I went and directed on was also in Europe. And so our audience was English speakers, but mostly primary French and German as their first language. So there was a lot of jokes. You know, jokes are often reliant on language, right? So they just didn't get the jokes. And so we had done a lot of silent pieces, but many of those relied on sexual things. And so what we ended up doing was creating a piece called The Norwegian Jewel Experience that was just things that happened on the cruise
boat.
Ship.
Yeah.
Yes.
And there's a lot of material there.
Oh, 100%. But people laughed just at the things they recognized. Oh, I know what it was like to put on that life vest and have to do the drill. Oh, I laughed because I know that guy who stands in the
But
line.
If I did that same material, or anybody mm-hmm. did, at a club in Oklahoma or Chicago, it probably doesn't play as well.
Oh, of course not, because it's specific to that audience.
Yeah, which makes then the comedy a lot of work too, doesn't it?
Well, you are always looking for what are those things that most people recognize, right? And so in some ways, you know, again, our Second City's corporate division does corporate comedy for groups. And we always have what we call the Bob from Accounting effect,
yeah, right.
Which is that if you say the name of the guy that everybody knows, but is sort of a low-level employee, you'll get a huge laugh. On an extended level, when you're looking to create something that's going to make a large number of people laugh, part of what you're asking is what's happening in the world that everybody recognizes that's a little bit painful, and how do we make it okay?
And Libera's book is Funnier, A New Theory for the Practice of Comedy. This is a almost how-to book on how to be funnier, everything from how to be funnier to literally how to write jokes. Mm-hmm. Were you tempted to put in a bunch of your favorite jokes?
Well, and I do put in many of my favorite jokes. And one of the things I teach...
I got 330 pages here, and I'll bet there's not 50 jokes in this book.
Well, I'm more interested in the lines underneath them,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I am interested in how the jokes work. So it's more about taking that joke and then saying, okay, what is happening in that joke?
And you also write then how to edit a joke, how to mm-hmm. rewrite a joke, make some material that looks funny, funnier, which is kind of a challenge I get every day. We do a joke bit, people send me jokes, and I'm always trying to think, how can I punch it up or tighten it up?
Yes.
Which is critical. But you write about thick and thin jokes, too.
Well, this is the other thing, is that recognizing that a pun is a really thin joke, right? You know what it is. It's a word that, there's a great Phyllis Diller joke. Light travels faster than sound, which is why some people seem bright until they speak.
Right, exactly.
Right? So that's just a pun. It's about the difference between two words. But our favorite jokes, the jokes that really make us laugh hard, are thicker. They have some meaning to them.
Yeah.
They teach us something about the way people behave. And also, they may have just like really good sounds in them. A joke with K's in it are funnier.
You
example,
and I were talking off the air about how so many of the bad words in our language have the k sound.
Yeah.
Do your own inventory at home. I referenced before the break that you guys were working on an Anne Frank sketch.
Okay, yes.
Which you would think would be impossible.
Well, so this was, and I want to say this, depending on the era that we're in, sometimes we have more feelings of safety. I think right now our audiences, and I see this at Second City all the time, has less of a feeling of safety, so we can't do as edgy comedy.
It's as true on college campuses,
yep,
too.
Absolutely.
Keep going.
So this was in the 90s, and I was working with Jordan Klepper, who you might know from his work on Comedy Central. And Jordan had a pitch where he played a politician, a really good guy. He was a doctor. He'd cured a form of cancer and was running as a vice presidential candidate for the United States and was at a press conference. And he just happens to mention that he hates Anne Frank. Hmm. And the press corps is terrified. And they're like, well, what do you mean? And he's like, no, she just whines a lot. Whine, whine, whine. Have you read the diary?
And what happened?
This is the thing. So we are playing it for a late night college audience.
In the 90s.
In the 90s. Jordan is a very affable human who can sort of protect. You'd sense that he's a good person, even when he's playing a bad person. So there's a lot of safety there. And what we did was we tweaked that idea for the young audience that we were working for, and it got huge laughs.
And was the presentation devoid of any reference to her nationality or her faith, but just picking on teenage traits?
Yes, it was making fun of all the reasons why you find a 15-year-old teenager's diary really annoying.
Yeah, right. And wow, that's what a risk.
It is a risk. And by the way, one of the things that makes comedy comedy is risk. We love it when a comedian goes out on a line.
Yeah, right.
Right? And then if they can pull it back, maybe one of the most brilliant comedy moments was Tig Notaro going out at Largo and announcing to this group, hello, I have cancer.
Yeah, right. You know who you referenced in here, and I just thought was so courageous is probably the wrong word, but Andy Kaufman.
Andy Kaufman.
He did that Saturday Night Live bit where he lip-synced Mighty Mouse.
Well, so I also, among other things, I teach comedy history, and I love showing Andy Kaufman to the 19-year-old students because they don't know him, and he just tickles them at the best level. But what he was interested in was stretching people's patience for as long as possible, and he does it brilliantly. When he does that Mighty Mouse routine, you think he really is a nervous, bad comedian
who's failing right before your eyes,
and you are uncomfortable. And then he suddenly hits a certain point in the record, and he does a perfect imitation of the song with it, and it is incredibly skilled. Again, this is a big piece of very thick comedy. He's incredibly skilled. He is withheld from you the fact that he's skilled. And he's playing with your discomfort and the ease which he can play with it.
Well, thank you very much, as he would say. Thank you very much.
he had a game where he was Latka on Taxi, right?
Yeah, right.
And he played another comedian named Tony Clifton, who he pretended was a different comedian than himself. And he actually came to the set of Taxi pretending to be Tony Clifton. And got himself thrown off the set. Did not let go of the game.
But his Tony Clifton was obnoxious,
yes,
too. Which always made me wonder what is happening with him. And maybe that's the genius of a him or a Paul Rubens. It's like, are you that person or are you person playing? Who are you?
Well, and what's interesting is that this is comedy. And I think this is a very modern kind of comedy, which is it's a comedy that is funny to think about later. It's not comedy that is fun to be in the room with. You might not laugh at his stuff, but when you think about it later, you're like, oh my gosh, that was so uncomfortable.
We're out of time, Anne, but would you say that this book is also applicable? Like, I think I had real insight or I gained a lot from reading your book. I'm not gonna write jokes or go on stage, but I think it makes me more sensitive and also hopefully a better communicator.
I teach a class at Northwestern that is about pitching for entrepreneurs. And the class that I teach on comedy within that really helps them make connection and learn how to use the tools of comedy in order to sell better.
And Libera's book is Funnier, A New Theory for the Practice of Comedy. Its published date is today. Mm-hmm. media and events queries. Wait, but who's the publisher on this?
Northwestern University Press.
Makes sense. Thanks for coming into the studio.
Thanks so much, John.
Well done.